What was he looking for? Wait. Of course. He emerged from his room a few minutes later, wearing a uniform he hadn't put on in years. It was Colin Blue, still a military outfit, but cut for a more relaxed fit. Though not specifically trendy, it had a more stylized set of glyphs on the back and thicker cuffs and collar than a standard uniform. Many would have simply assumed it to be an ordinary Colin uniform. Adolin had designed it himself 4 years earlier. He'd wanted to create something that would look sharp while satisfying his father's requirements to be in uniform. The project had excited him for weeks. It had been his first, and only, real attempt at clothing design. The first day he'd worn it, Dalinar had chewed him out. So it had gone into the trunk, tucked away. Forgotten. Father probably still wouldn't approve, but these days Dalinar didn't approve of Adolin in general. So what was the harm? He replaced his arm bracer, strapped on his side sword, and entered the hallway. Then he hesitated. Shallan had given him an hour, and there was something else Adolin wanted to check off his list before leaving. So he turned the other direction and climbed the steps toward the sixth floor. Adolin was surprised to find a line at the clinic. The sixth floor wasn't particularly well populated, but news had apparently spread. None of the waiting patients seemed too unfortunate, children cradling scrapes with hovering parents nearby, a line of women with coughs or aches. Anything serious would warrant the attention of an edge dancer or a truth watcher. Some bowed to Adolin as he slipped into the front room, where Kaladin's mother was greeting each patient and recording their symptoms. She smiled at Adolin, holding up two fingers, and waved him down the hallway beyond. Adolin went that direction. The first room he passed had the door cracked, revealing Kaladin's father seeing a young man. A town girl stood next to him, reading aloud the notes Liren's wife had taken. The second room along the hallway was a similar but empty exam room. Adolin slipped in, and Kaladin entered a few minutes later, drying his hands on a cloth. It was odd to see him in simple brown trousers and a white buttoned shirt. In fact, had Adolin ever seen Kaladin out of uniform? Honestly, Adolin had assumed the man slept in the thing. Yet here he was, with sleeves rolled up to his elbows, his shoulder-length hair pulled back into a tail. Kaladin stopped when he saw Adolin. "You can go to your brother for healing, Adolin. I have real patients that need help." Adolin ignored the comment and glanced out into the hallway, looking toward the waiting room. "You're a popular fellow, bridge boy."
"I'm convinced half of them are here to get a peek at me," Kaladin said with a sigh. He tied on a white surgeon's apron. "I fear my notoriety could overshadow the clinic's purpose."
Adolin chuckled.
"Be careful. Now that I've vacated the position, you're Alethkar's most eligible bachelor. Shardbearer, radiant, landed, and single? I wouldn't be surprised to hear that half the young ladies in the kingdom are suddenly coming down with headaches."
He trailed off as he noticed Kaladin's frown.
"It's already happened, hasn't it?"
Adolin said, pointing.
"I had wondered why so many light-eyed women suddenly needed medication," he said. "I'd thought that maybe their personal surgeons had been recruited into the war."
He glanced at Adolin, then blushed.
"You can be deliciously naive sometimes, Cal," Adolin said. "You need to use this angle. Work it."
"That would betray the ethics of the surgeon-patient relationship," Kaladin said, closing the door, preventing Adolin from counting the suspiciously well-dressed young women in the waiting room. "Have you come to torment me, or is there an actual purpose behind this visit?"
"I just wanted to check on you," Adolin said. "See how recruitment is going?"
Kaladin shrugged. He walked over to begin arranging the medications and bandages on the shelf, where sphere lanterns glowed with a pure white light. Syl winked into existence beside Adolin's head,
forming from luminous mist as if she were a shard blade.
"This is good for him," she said, leaning in. "He's actually relaxing for once."
"There aren't many serious cases," Kaladin said, his back to them. "It can be grueling with so many people in line, but it isn't as tense as I worried it would be."
"It's working," Syl continued, landing on Adolin's shoulder. "His parents are always around, so he's almost never alone. He still has nightmares, but I think he's getting more sleep."
Adolin watched Kaladin fold bandages, then noticed how Kaladin glanced at the surgery knives laid out in a row. He shouldn't keep them out like that, should he? Adolin made a sudden motion, standing up straight from where he'd been leaning against the door, his feet scraping the stone. Kaladin immediately reached for the knives, then glanced back and, seeing nothing was wrong, relaxed. Adolin walked over and put his hand on Kaladin's shoulder.
"Hey," he said, "it chases us all, including me, Cal."
He fished in his pocket, then brought out a metal disc about an inch across. He held it toward Kaladin.
"I dropped by to give you this."
"What is it?" Kaladin asked, taking the disc. One side was engraved with a picture of a divine figure in robes, while the other side bore the same figure in battle gear. Both were surrounded by strange foreign glyphs. It had been coated with some colored enamel at one point, but that had mostly worn off.
"Zael gave it to me when I finished my training with him," Adolin said. "Says it's from his homeland. They use these things as money. Weird, eh?"
"Why don't they use spheres?"
"Maybe they don't have enough gemstones." "He's from somewhere to the west. He doesn't look like a foreigner, though, so I'm guessing it must be Bavland."
"This side might be a herald," Kaladin said, squinting at the strange glyphs. "What does it say?"
"War is the last option of the state that has failed," Adolin said, tapping the side with the divine-robed figure.
He pushed it to spin it in Kaladin's fingers, showing the other side.
"But it is better than having no options."
"Huh," Kaladin said.
"Zael told me," Adolin said, "that he always considered himself a coward for training soldiers. He said that if he truly believed in stopping the war, he'd walk away from the sword completely. Then he gave me the disc, and I knew he understood. In a perfect world, no one would have to train for battle. We don't live in a perfect world."
"How does this relate to me?" Kaladin asked.
"Well, there's no shame in you taking time away from the sword. Maybe permanently. All the same, I know you enjoy it."
"I shouldn't enjoy killing," Kaladin said softly. "I shouldn't even enjoy the fight. I should hate it like my father does."
"You can hate killing and enjoy the contest," Adolin said. "Plus, there are practical reasons to keep your skills up. Take these months to relax. When I return, though, let's find a chance to spar together again, all right? I want you to see what I see in duels. It's not about hurting others. It's about being your best."
"I don't know if I can ever think like you do," Kaladin said. He wrapped his fist around the metal disc. "But thank you. I'll keep the offer in mind." Adolin clapped him on the shoulder, then glanced towards Syl.
"I need to be off into Shadesmar. Any last tips for me?"
"Be careful, Adolin," she said, flitting up into the air. "My kind aren't like Highspren. We don't look to laws, but to morality as our guide."
"That's good, isn't it?" Adolin said.
"It is, unless you happen to disagree with their interpretation of morality. My kind can be very difficult to persuade with logic, because for us, well, what we feel can often be more important to us than what we think. We're Spren of honor, but remember, honor is, even to us, what humans and Spren define it to be. Particularly with our god dead."
Adolin nodded.
"Right then. Cal, don't let anyone burn the tower down while I'm away.
You should have been the surgeon, Adolin, Kaladin said. Not me. You care about people.
Don't be silly, Adolin said, pulling open the door as he gestured at Kaladin's work clothing. I could never dress like that.
He left Kaladin with a wink. Adolin strode out the front gate of Eurythiru's imposing tower and entered the chill air of the plateau. He was a full 6 minutes early. Handy the way Aunt Navani's device let him time himself. If everyone had clocks, he'd spend way less time waiting around at winehouses for his friends to arrive. The broad plain in front of him, too smooth to be natural, stretched like a roadway toward the mountain peaks in the distance. 10 perfectly circular platforms rose from the sides of the plateau, with ramps leading up to each. These oath gates were portals to places around the world. Currently, only 4 functioned. The ones to the Shattered Plains, Thelena, Yakaved, and Aesir. A group had gathered on the platform leading to the Shattered Plains, but they wouldn't travel to that destination. This was just the gate where Adolin's team would enter Shadesmar. His breath puffing before him, Adolin jogged over to the ramp where his armorers were packing his shard plate in its traveling chest, cushioned with straw. Though the stuff was as hard as stone, they always took the utmost care with it. There was a certain reverence due to a shard.
"It's not going to make the transfer, Bright Lord," one armorer warned him. "When you go to Shadesmar, it will be left behind on the platform. It's been tested on several suits already."
"My armor might act differently," Adolin said. "I want to be sure. If it does fail to make the trip, send it along with Father and his expeditionary force. He'll lend it to Fisk to complement his blade."
The armorers saluted. Nearby, a few other stragglers were hurrying up the slope to the Oath Gate, including Shallan's newest agent, a tall Alethi woman with excellent taste in dresses. She carried a pack over her shoulder, but she wasn't going on the trip, was she?
"Beryl,"
Adolin called to her as she passed.
"Wasn't Stargyle chosen to make this journey?"
"Oh, Bright Lord," the dark-eyed woman said. "Stargyle's wife has come down with a sickness. He wants to stay with her, so he decided I should go instead."
"Huh."
He nodded absently as the woman hurried up the slope. Shallan had seemed very particular about whom she wanted to bring. Hopefully this hadn't upset her plans. Well, nothing to do about it. He stepped over to a tall black horse standing at the ready. Gallant was surrounded by Adolin's grooms, who were preparing to strap equipment to the horse's back, including Adolin's weapons and his trunk of clothing. The horse should have been loaded already. Adolin stepped up to the Rashadium and stared into his watery blue eyes, which, if he looked closely, had a faint swirl of rainbow colors to them. The horse glanced at the pack straps the porters were affixing onto his back. They required stools to get high enough.
"What?"
Adolin asked. The horse blew out, then glared at the straps again.
"You think because we're royalty, we're above doing a little labor?"
Adolin pointed at the horse, meeting his eyes.
"It's like Father always says, never be unwilling to do something you might ask another to do for you."
He reached into his pocket and pulled out a pala fruit.
"Here."
The horse turned away.
"Fine," Adolin said. "I'll have them saddle up one of the common horses instead. Leave you behind."
Gallant turned back to him, glaring. Then, reluctantly, the horse ate the pala fruit and spat out the pit. Adolin rubbed him on the muzzle, then patted his neck. Nearby, one of the grooms watched, baffled, until one of the others nudged him.
"I talked to my sword, too," Adolin told them. "Funny thing is, she eventually talked back. Never be afraid to show a little respect to those you depend upon, friends."
The two grooms scuttled away as two workmen hitched Adolin's armor boxes into place on one side of the horse.
"Thank you," Adolin said to Gallant. "For being with me. I know you'd rather be with Father."
The horse blew out, then reached his muzzle into Adolin's hand. Rashadium chose their riders. They were not broken or trained. They accepted you, or they did not, and it was very rare for one to allow two riders. Father loved his horse, he really did. But he was so busy with meetings these days, and Gallant seemed so forlorn, abandoned just a little. And, well, Adolin had his own loss he was dealing with. So it had seemed a natural pairing, one that over the months had become more and more strong. The grooms finished with the armor trunks, and then hooked Adolin's clothing trunk on the other side. That wasn't nearly as heavy as the plate, so to weight that side roughly equal, a worker approached with a long box. Adolin stopped him, wanting to do one last check. He knelt to undo the latches and peeked inside.
"Storms," a voice said. "Pardon, Bright Lord, but how many swords do you need?"
Adolin grinned up at Godeki, the edge dancer, who was leading his horse nearby. The slender man wore his hair cropped short, though he wasn't technically an ardent any longer, and so he didn't need to shave it. Beyond him, Zu, the team's stone ward, was lifting her pack onto her back. The golden-haired woman continually complained about the cold and huddled in a coat several sizes too large.
"Well," Adolin said to Godeki, "you can never have too many swords. Besides, no shard blades can enter Shadesmar, so a man must be prepared."
"You're wearing a sword."
"This?" Adolin said, patting his side sword. "Oh, sure, this is better than nothing, but I'd hate to be caught with just it and no buckler. Besides, I've trained to duel mostly on long swords and great swords."
He pulled his great sword out of his arms box. The long weapon was intended to be used two-handed. It wasn't as long as some shard blades, of course, nor as wide.
"I don't know how much dueling you'll be doing, Bright Lord."
"Obviously," Adolin said. "That's why I need these others."
He handed it to the groom.
"Fix its scabbard to Gallant's left shoulder, its guard in line with the saddle."
To Godeki, he continued,
"See here, a hand and a half sword for use with or without my shield. A nice sword staff for horseback. I can screw in this piece to make it longer."
"I see."
"Here, this is an Amulikusu," Adolin said, holding up a long curved sword. "Great for slicing and cutting, especially when doing ride-by charges. Easier to withdraw the blade and better against someone unarmored. And here, I need this Vaden house sword if we end up fighting against mail."
"I should be—"
"Don't forget shard-bearers," Adolin said, hefting a warhammer. It looked small, almost like a workman's hammer with a longer handle, so tiny compared to the massive shard-bearers' hammers wielded by men in plate. He didn't want to make Gallant haul one of those on their trip. "Need this if I end up being forced to crack some plate. The swords will simply break, except maybe the house sword. Might be able to get that through a crack once the armor is weakened."
"I really—"
"And here, see this one?"
He pulled out a unique triangular weapon, gripped at the base with a kind of handle instead of a true hilt.
"Thalen Gatet. I've always wanted to train with one of these. Figured I might get some practice in."
Godeki waved to someone farther up the ramp, then hastily said farewell before hiking off, tugging his horse after him. Adolin grinned, then had the workers hang a few more weapons from the horse's saddle. Gallant tapped his hooves with what seemed to be satisfaction, happier to be outfitted with proper weapons and not just luggage. The workers affixed the box with the rest in place.
"You seem almost pleased,"
Zu said, strolling over in her oversized coat.
"To not be able to use shard blades, I mean."
Adolin hadn't spoken to the woman much. He hadn't realized how good her Alethi was. Apparently her people had turned her out when her powers had first manifested several years ago. They hadn't realized she was a Radiant and had thought her cursed by some strange god whose name Adolin hadn't recognized. The Iriale fought for the enemy now, but Dalinar didn't turn away anyone who came asking for asylum, particularly if they'd said radiant oaths.
"Well," Adolin said, "I wouldn't say happy. A shard blade is the superior weapon. No amount of specialization for the situation can make up for the ability to slice through your opponent's weapons, armor, even body, as if they were water. I love wielding mine in duels. There's just a part of me that regrets that it makes other weapons obsolete."
"I disagree," Zeus said, summoning her blade. "Why would you ever regret the existence of one of these?"
It appeared in her hand upon her command, forming from mist. She preferred a slender blade, even longer than his father's, with a wicked curve to it. Adolin stood up, breathing heat into his hands, as Merritt began leading the pack animals up the ramp onto the Oathgate platform. Adolin glanced at Gallant. The horse clopped off to follow, needing no bridle or rope to guide him. Zoo waved her sword overhead, slowly in a kind of kata that caught the sun. It transformed in her hands, becoming smaller and shorter, like his side sword, then became straight with a tip for thrusting. The fact that living shard blades could change shapes explained a lot to Adolin. The ancient shard blades, the dead ones that most shard bearers used, were locked, apparently into the last shape they'd held. Most were massive things, not clunky. A shard blade could never be clunky, but also not particularly well-suited to most battlefield actions. They were light, yes, but the size could be unwieldy nonetheless. Modern Radiants preferred functional weapons when actually fighting. However, when they wanted to show off, they created something majestic and otherworldly, something that was less about practicality and more about awe. That indicated most shard blades, his own included, had practical forms, but had been abandoned in their more showy styles.
"I didn't mean to imply there's not an art to a shard blade," Adolin said to Zoo. "I truly love shard blade duels. I just love finding the best weapon for the job. And when that answer isn't always the same sword, it's more satisfying."
"You should become a Radiant," she said. "Then your sword would always be the right weapon for the job."
"As if it were that easy," Adolin said. "Just become a Radiant."
His equipment seen to, Adolin did a quick head count. 6 of his soldiers were coming as guards and workers, dark-eyed men specifically chosen because they had good heads on their shoulders. Adolin didn't pick the best duelists. He chose men who could cook and do laundry in the field. Most importantly, he needed men who wouldn't balk at oddities. Felt was the best of them, an older foreign man, one of Dalinar's friends from the early days. He was steady and reliable and had training as a scout. Merritt was a groom, and Urad was an excellent hunter should they need to forage. Adolin wasn't certain how useful that would be in Shadesmar, but best to be prepared. Felt's wife Molly worked in the quartermaster's office and was along to act as a scribe. No actual servants, though Shallan's 3 lightweavers did odd jobs for her. That left the 3 full Radiants. Godeki and Zoo he'd already checked on. Asking around, Adolin found that their final Radiant, a Tashiki woman, had returned to the tower to check on something. So he idled near the ramp, waiting until he saw her crossing the plateau. The woman had to be in her 70s, with dark brown furrowed skin and silver hair. She was slender, but not frail. Adolin suspected from her firm step that she relied on stormlight to strengthen her. Though he'd seen her wearing a Tashiki wrap in the tower before, today she wore rugged traveling clothing and a shawl over her hair, with a pack slung over one shoulder. As she approached, Adolin reached to help her carry it, but she tightened her fingers. She didn't speak much Alethi, but most of the Spren were able to speak several human languages. He wasn't certain if it was an aspect of their nature, or if they simply lived so long that they ended up picking up multiple languages. Either way, the Spren could translate, if necessary, and Adolin really did want to bring a Truth Watcher. They had once been well regarded by the Honor Spren. Though the woman's name was Arshkam, everyone called her the Stump, a nickname that Lift had spread, he believed. Arshkam had mentioned she was fond of the name, and the way she strode, unbowed by age, insisting on carrying her own things, gave him an inkling of where the moniker had come from. With her arrival, the entire expedition was accounted for. A half-dozen pack animals weren't many for 15 people. Normally, he'd have expected that many animals for just the food, plus some wagons carrying storm barrels that could be chained down to catch rainwater. Fortunately, this group had Shallan's lightweavers to provide food and water through soul casting. As Adolin crossed the platform, he passed the queen standing, as always, with Wit at her shoulder. She, Dalinar, and Taravangian were the only monarchs at the tower today, and they'd all come to see off the expedition. Yasna was supervising Ishna and Vatha, two of Shallan's agents, determining for herself if they were capable. Adolin lingered as Vatha knelt beside a large block of obsidian. A glassy stone had been mined in Shadesmar and brought through for the test. Vatha's hand sank into the block, and then the structure of the obsidian changed. In the blink of an eye, the rock transformed into grain. Kind of. What Vatha made was a large square lump of hardened lapis pulp, not individual seeds like some advanced soulcasters could make. They could cut off chunks, cook it to mush. It wasn't tasty, but it was hearty and healthy.
"Do they know?" Adolin wondered. "How much Yasna sees them as tools?"
For centuries, the Alethi soulcasting devices, limited though they were, had given his kingdom an unparalleled edge in battle. Now, lightweavers were soul-casting, and didn't seem to suffer the same ill effects as users of the devices. Adolin could see deeper motives in the months Yasna had spent training Shallan and her agents. Though Shallan wanted her team to become spies, Yasna seemed to see their powers of illusion as a distant second to their ability to feed armies. Hopefully, the cache of soul-casting devices found in Amia would relieve some of that pressure. Shallan watched from the near distance, sitting on a supply box, her expression unreadable. Though by far the most talented at illusions among her people, Shallan's own abilities in soul-casting had proven erratic. Adolin had peeked in on her sessions to see only occasional lumps of grain. Other times, she accidentally created twisted things, flames, sometimes pools of blood, once a translucent crystal. Yasna had finally, after 8 months of work, officially released Shallan from her wardship. And Shallan truly had earned that release. She'd gone to lessons, memorized the works of scholars, and acted as the perfect ward. Though mastery of soul casting eluded her, she had improved over the year. Yasna dismissed the two agents, who hastened to join the others. Adolin found himself growing anxious as everyone gathered around the small building at the center of the platform. Not that he had any reason. It was just that it had been months since he'd last visited Shadesmar. Dalinar stepped up to the group and waited for everyone to quiet.
"He would want to speak, of course."
Adolin's father could turn anything into an excuse for an inspirational speech.
"I commend your bravery," Dalinar said to the gathered people. "Know that you go representing not only me, but the entire coalition. With you go the hopes of millions. The realm you traverse will be alien and at times hostile. Do not forget that it once held allies, and their fortresses welcomed men with open arms. Your task is to rekindle those ancient alliances as we have reformed the ancient bond between nations. Know that you take with you my utmost confidence."
Not bad, Adolin thought. At least it was short. Adolin's six men cheered as expected. The Radiants applauded politely, which generally wasn't the response that one of Dalinar's rousing speeches received. He continued to treat them like soldiers, though most of the Radiants here today had never been in the military. Shallan was a country light eyes and scholar turned spy. The Stump had run an orphanage. Godecki had been an ardent. So far as Adolin knew, Zhu was the only one who had held anything resembling a weapon before saying her oaths. Yasna said a few words, and so did Taravangian. Adolin listened with half an ear, wondering if Taravangian found it odd that the expedition wasn't taking any dustbringers. No one had spoken the reason, but it was obvious to Adolin. The dustbringers didn't serve Dalinar, at least not loyally enough for his taste. At the end of the speeches, the members of the expedition began squeezing into the small control building, leading the horses in as well. There might be some way to bring everyone on the platform into Shadesmar, but so far they'd been limited to people standing in the small control building. Adolin waved for Shallan to go in first without him. Yasna, Taravangian, and Wit began to retreat across the platform with their attendants. Soon, Adolin and Dalinar stood facing one another, alone outside the building. A snort broke the air. Gallant had lingered, refusing the grooms who tried to coax him into the building with fruit. Dalinar broke his stern posture and patted the horse on the neck.
"Thank you," he said to Adolin, "for caring for him these last months. I don't get much time for riding these days."
"We both know how busy you are, father."
"That's a new uniform," Dalinar said to him. "Better than some you've been wearing lately."
"That's amusing," Adolin said. 4 years ago, when I last wore this, you called it disgraceful."
Dalinar stiffened, lowering his hand from Gallant's neck. Then he clasped his hands behind his back and stood tall. So storming tall. Sometimes Adolin's father was more like a soul-cast statue than a person.
"I guess we've both become more lax over the years," Dalinar said.
"I think I've stayed the same person," Adolin said. "I'm just more willing to let you be disappointed by that person."
"Son," Dalinar said, "I'm not disappointed in you."
"Aren't you? Can you truthfully say that with an oath?"
Dalinar fell silent.
"I merely want you to be the best man you can be," he finally said. "A better man than I was at your age. I know that's the person you really are, and I want you to represent me well. Is that such a terrible thing?" "I don't represent you anymore, father. I'm a high prince. I represent myself. Is that such a terrible thing?"
Dalinar sighed.
"Don't go down this road, son. Do not let my feelings drive you to rebel against what you know is right, merely because it's what I wish of you."
"I'm not..."
Adolin made fists, trying to squeeze out his frustration.
"I'm not simply rebelling, father. I'm not 14 anymore."
"No. When you were 14, you looked up to me for some reason."
Dalinar glanced after the departing figures, growing small on the platform.
"You see Taravangian out there? Do you know how he sees the world? Any cost, any price is worth paying if what you want to achieve is, in the end, worthy. Follow him and you'll be able to justify anything. Lying to your soldiers? Necessary to get them to do their work. Gathering wealth? You need it to further your important goals. Killing innocents? All to forge a stronger nation."
He eyed Adolin.
"Murdering a man in a back alley, then lying about it? Well, the world is better off without him. In fact, there are a lot of people this world could do without. Let's start removing them quietly."
"Maybe I murdered Sadeus," Adolin thought, "but at least I never killed anyone innocent. At least I didn't burn my own wife to death."
The seething knot deep inside him, the one Adolin didn't dare touch lest it burn him. He knew Dalinar had been a different man then, a man not in his right mind, betrayed, consumed by the power of one of the unmade. Besides,
Dalinar hadn't killed Adolin's mother on purpose.
One could know these things without feeling them. And this wasn't something you forgave.
Adolin shoved that furious knot down and didn't let it rule him, ignoring the anger spren at his feet. He said nothing to his father. He didn't trust the anger, the frustration, and yes, the shame churning within. If he opened his mouth, one of the three might come out, but he couldn't say which.
"You either believe as Taravangian does," Dalinar said, "or you accept the better path. Let your actions define you more than your intentions. Let your goals and the journey used to attain them must align. I'm trying to stop you before you do some things you will truly, sincerely regret."
"And if I think the actions I've taken are worthy," Adolin said,
"then perhaps we need to consider that my training of you in your youth was faulty. That is not surprising. I was not exactly the best of examples."
"It's about you again," Adolin thought. "I can't have an opinion or make choices. I'm only acting like this because of your influence.
Collect Yzerza and heralds above."
Adolin loved his father, even now with everything he'd learned about what Dalinar had done, even with that event. He loved his father. He loved that Dalinar tried so hard, and he had become someone far better than he'd once been.
But damnation!
This last year, Adolin had begun to realize how difficult it could be to live around the man.
"Maybe,"
Adolin said, calming himself with effort.
"Maybe, incredible though it may seem, there are more than two choices in life. I'm not you, but that doesn't mean I'm Taravangian. Maybe I'm my own brand of wrong."
Dalinar rested his hand on Adolin's shoulder. It should have been comforting, but Adolin couldn't help but see it as a way to control the conversation. To put himself in the position of father, and Adolin squarely into his role as whining child.
"Son," Dalinar said, "I believe in you. Go succeed on this mission. Convince the Honor Spren that we're worthy of them. Prove to them that we have men waiting to take up the oaths and soar."
Adolin glanced at his father's hand on his shoulder, then met the man's eyes.
There was something in those words.
"You want me to become one of them, don't you?" Adolin said. "Part of the purpose of this trip, in your eyes, is for me to become a Radiant."
"Your brother is worthy," Dalinar said. "And your father, against his best efforts, has proven worthy. I'm sure you will prove yourself, too."
"As if I didn't have enough burdens."
Complaints died on Adolin's lips, complaints that there were likely thousands of worthy people in the world, and not all of them would be chosen. Complaints that he was fine with his life and didn't need to live up to some Spren's ideals. Instead, Adolin simply bowed his head and nodded. Dalinar won the argument. The Blackthorn was unaccustomed to anything else. It wasn't that Adolin agreed, but more that he didn't know what to think. And that was the real problem. He couldn't stand up to his father with maybes. Dalinar clapped him on the shoulder with his other hand and wished him farewell. Adolin walked gallant into the chamber, high prince, leader of the expedition, and somehow still a little boy. It was crowded inside with the horses. These circular control buildings had a rotating inner wall along with murals on the floor indicating various locations. Normally, in order to initiate a swap, a Radiant used their shard blade as a key to rotate the inner wall to the proper point. Today, Shallan did something different. At a nod from him, she summoned her shard blade and fitted into the keyhole on the wall. Then she kept pushing, her sword melting out like a silvery puddle on the wall, the hilt flowing like liquid around her hand. She lifted her hand upward, moving the entire locking mechanism straight up. In a flash, they were thrown into Shadesmar.
Shallan's Sketchbook, Mistspren. The porcelain masks sometimes catch the light and sparkle almost translucently. When a Mistspren speaks, its mask's lips do not move, neither does the mask's expression change. Mistspren can determine how they appear in Shadesmar. They usually choose a shape like a person, but they don't have to. They appear in the physical realm like the light reflected onto a surface from a sunbeam passing through a crystal, regardless of whether a surface or light exists when they appear.
22. No use talking.
I have reached out to the others as you requested, and have received a variety of responses.
Over the last week, Adolin had tasked his soldiers with making the transfer to Shadesmar several times. He'd even sent the horses in and out to make certain they wouldn't panic. So most everyone was ready for what they saw. Nevertheless, they all, Adolin included, fell silent, struck by the incredible sights. The sky was black as midnight, only without stars. The sun seemed too distant, too frail, to properly light the place, though he wasn't in darkness. He could easily see the small platform around them, which was the size of the control room. The sunlight illuminated the landscape, but strangely didn't light the sky. The control room hadn't come with them. Instead, two enormous spren stood in the air nearby. The attendants of this gateway, 30 or 40 feet tall, one marble white and the other onyx. Adolin raised a hand toward them as he stepped across the platform.
"Thank you, Ancient Ones," he called.
"It is done as the Stormfather requires," the marble one replied, voice booming. "Our parent, the sibling, has died. We will obey him instead."
Long ago, a mysterious spren named the Sibling had lived in Urethiru. It was now dead, or sleeping, or maybe that was the same thing. Spren answers about the Sibling contradicted one another. In any case, before dying, the Sibling had commanded these sentries to stop allowing people into Shadesmar. Many of the gatekeepers maintained this rule. However, a few had listened to the Stormfather's request. They said that, in the absence of other bondsmiths, Dalinar and the Stormfather were worthy of obedience, even in contradiction of ancient orders. That was fortunate, for while Shallan could slip into Shadesmar using her powers, she couldn't take anyone with her, and she couldn't return on her own. Even Yasna, whose powers supposedly allowed it, had trouble bringing herself back from Shadesmar. This platform was one of 10 set upon tall pillars here, rising in a pattern similar to the one the Oath Gates made in front of Urethiru. Adolin could see the other sentries hanging above them. Each pillar had a long, spiraling ramp around it, leading down to the bead ocean far below. But the tower itself was far more majestic than any other sight. Adolin turned around, gazing up at the shimmering mountain of light and colors. The Mother of Pearl Radiance didn't exactly mimic the shape of the tower, but had a more crystalline feel to it. Except it wasn't physical, but light. Radiant, resplendent, and brilliant. The tower was the same color the sky turned in Shadesmar when a high storm was passing over Roshar. And the place was positively swarming with emotion spren on this side. They soared through it in great swarms, taking a variety of shapes, most distant enough that Adolin saw them only as small bits of color, though he knew they had strange shapes here. More organic, more beastly. They flew, crawled, and climbed across and through the tower's shimmering light, making it look like a hive. It wasn't until coming here that Adolin had realized just how many spren the humans of Urethiru attracted.
Some of those could be dangerous on this side, but they'd been told the nature of the tower offered protection from that. Spren here were glutted on emotions and were calmer. Everyone took a few minutes to absorb the stunning vista, the mountain of iridescent colors, the sentinels, the Spren, and the long drop to the ocean below. Adolin finally tore his eyes away to do a quick recount of their numbers, as the Radiants had been joined by their personal Spren. Pattern stood near Shallan. He was a tall figure in two stiff robes, with a changing symbol for a head. Adolin felt he could tell Pattern from the other cryptics. There was a spring to Pattern's step. He bounced when the other three cryptics glided. Their symbols were also slightly different. Adolin cocked his head, trying to decide why he should think that, as the symbols were always changing, never repeating, that he could see. Yet the speed at which they changed and the general feel of each one was distinct. Zu, the closest Radiant to Adolin, leaped up and grabbed her tall Spren in a hug.
"Ha!" said the golden-haired stone ward. "You're a mountain on this side, Wapum."
Her Spren's skin appeared as if it were made of cracked rock, and it was glowing from within as if molten. Otherwise, he had generally human-like features. Wapum wore fur-lined clothing on this side, like one might expect from one who lived high in the mountains. Adolin wasn't certain how all that worked. Did Spren get cold? Godeki was an edge dancer, so his Spren was a cultivation Spren, a type Adolin had seen many times before. Shaped roughly like a short woman, she was composed entirely of vines. Those vines wound tightly together into a face that had two crystals for eyes. Crystal hands, incredibly fine and delicate, emerged from the sleeves of her robe, and she had an aloof air as she looked around. The last Spren was the oddest to Adolin. She seemed to be made entirely from mist, all save for the face, which hovered on the front of the head in the shape of a porcelain mask. That mask had a kind of twinkling reflection to it, always catching the light. In fact, he could have sworn that from some perspectives it was made of translucent crystal. The Spren seemed to be female, or at least had a feminine figure and voice. This would be the Spren of Arshkam, the Truth Watcher. The Spren wore a vest and trousers, both of which somehow floated and encapsulated the body made entirely of white fog. Her hands ended in gloves. Was it mist inside there, moving her fingers?
"Do you like staring at me, human?" she asked with a delicate voice that tinkled like cracking glass.
The mask's lips didn't move when she spoke.
"We Mistspren can choose our forms, you know. We usually choose a shape like a person, but we don't need to. You seem so fascinated. Do you think me pretty, or do you think me a monster?"
"I," Adolin said.
"Answer not,"
Zeus Peakspren, Wampom said with a grinding voice.
"You tease not."
"I'm not teasing," she replied, "merely questioning. I like to know how minds think."
"A worthy enough goal," Adolin said, searching around again. All of the Radiant Spren were there, but where was she? Shallan caught his eyes and nodded toward the ramp down, so he hurried over, stopping at the top as he found a final Spren sitting there, waiting. She was another cultivation Spren, with cord-like vines making up her face. But her vines were a dull brown, and they pulled tighter, giving her features a sunken-in cast. Maya still wore the same dull brown rags. However, he saw hints of what they'd once been. Not robes, as Godeki's Spren wore. This had been a uniform. Her most unnerving feature was her scratched-out eyes. It seemed as if someone had taken a knife to her face, except that she hadn't bled or been scarred by the cuts.
She'd been erased, ripped apart, removed from existence. When she looked at Adolin, she seemed like a painting that had been vandalized. She sat huddled on the ramp. She didn't speak, she never did, except one time over a year ago when she'd told him her name. She was his shard blade, and, he hoped, his friend. "Maya Lauren," he said, holding out his hand toward her. She regarded the hand, then cocked her head, as if it were some strange alien object for which she could determine no use. Adolin moved down the ramp and lightly took her hand, then put it into his. The coiled cords of her skin had a firm, smooth texture, like a good hogshide hilt. "Come on," he said. "Let me introduce the others." He tugged on her hand, and she followed, standing up and wordlessly joining him on the top of the platform. "That's Shallan," Adolin said, pointing.
"My wife.
You remember her in Pattern, right?"
"That's Gurdecki. He was once an Ardent. Ashkom is our Truth Watcher. She used to take care of orphans. And Zu, she's..."
Adolin hesitated.
"Zu, what did you used to do?"
"Make trouble, mostly," the Iriali woman said.
She pulled off her thick coat, letting out a deep sigh. Underneath, she wore a tight wrap around her upper torso, a little like a warrior's sarashi. She had bronze skin that seemed metallic to Adolin, and her hair wasn't like his own blonde. It was too golden. Though his mother had been from Rira, near Iri, the two peoples were distinct.
"Come on, Wapam," she said. "Let's see what's at the bottom of this ramp."
"Be careful,"
the peak spren said as Zu put her coat over her shoulder and strolled to the side of the ramp.
"Well,"
Adolin said to Maya,
"that's Zu.
Those other six are Shallan's lightweavers and their spren. Here, meet my soldiers." As he pulled Maya over to introduce her to Felt, the mist spren walked over beside him.
"There is no use talking to a deadeye," the creature said with unmoving lips. "Do you not understand this? What about you makes you wish to talk to something that cannot understand you?"
"She understands," Adolin said.
"You think that she does? This is curious."
Adolin ignored the odd spren, instead introducing Maya to his team. He'd told them to expect her, so they each bowed respectfully and didn't stare at her strange eyes too much. Letter even complimented her appearance as a blade, saying he'd always admired her beauty. Maya took it all with her characteristic mute solemnity. She didn't cock her head, she simply stood by Adolin, looking at whoever was speaking. She did understand. He'd felt her emotions through the sword. In fact, he'd felt like he'd always been able to sense her encouraging him. Shallan came over and took him by the arm.
"We should be moving on," she said. "See if the ship has arrived."
"Right, right," he said. "Here, watch Maya a moment. I need to check on Gallant."
He hurried over to the horse, and by the time he arrived, he already knew to expect some bad news. Humans in the physical realm were represented here as lights, like floating candle flames. A group of them gathered near the horse and were interacting with some shimmering, glowing blue colors. To be certain, Adolin checked Gallant's armor trunks. The shard plate hadn't made the trip. Adolin had hoped, well, it meant his armor wasn't different from any of the others. It couldn't be brought into Shadesmar. The lights on the other side were his armorers collecting the plate, which would have dropped to the platform on the other side.
"Ah, well," he said, unhooking the now empty armor trunks. "Let's get these off you."
Gallant blew out in a way that Adolin chose to interpret as sympathetic. Adolin redistributed the weight, then checked the weapons in Gallant's sheaths, including the massive greatsword that had almost the bulk of a shard blade.
They started walking toward the ramp, but Adolin paused, cocking his head. When Gallant moved, he trailed a faint shadow of light. It was almost imperceptible. When the horse shook his head from side to side, there was a distinct impression of an afterimage, the shape of the head, but glowing.
"Didn't expect you to be different here," Adolin said to the horse.
Gallant blew out again, his version of a shrug. Then he nibbled at Adolin's coat pocket. Adolin chuckled and dug out the other fruit he'd hidden there, wrapped in a handkerchief, naturally. Wouldn't do to stain his coat. He gave it to the horse with a pat on the neck.
"Well, at least you won't need to haul that plate around."
It made Adolin feel exposed. No blade, no plate, and the radiance would be limited, for while they brought plenty of infused gemstones, they couldn't renew them. He called for the group to begin carefully making its way down the ramp. With the railing, it wasn't too dangerous, but the walk was a long one. Urethivru was high in the mountains, and they needed to hike down to sea level. Strangely, Shallan told him they'd done measurements, and the path wasn't nearly as long as it would be in the physical realm. Space wasn't a one-to-one correlation in Shadesmar. Things seemed more compressed here, specifically in the vertical dimension. Isasek, the mapmaker, thought the place was incredible for reasons Adolin hadn't been able to grasp, despite having it explained to him 3 times. At any rate, the hike would take several hours. They started out, and Shallan joined him, watching Maya walk with Gallant ahead. Adolin put his arm around his wife.
"Do you think she was happy to see me? I hope she enjoys being around us. It has to be better than simply walking around on this side, haunting wherever I happen to be going."
"I'm sure she's happy," Shallan said.
"You don't think I'm crazy, do you? To treat her as I do?"
"I find it endearing,"
Shallan said.
"Even if you tease me about it?"
"That's how you know."
She smiled and stopped him, then went up on her tiptoes to kiss him.
"I like the outfit, too. You chose well."
"Thanks,
Adolin trailed off as someone else put their arm around him, then around Shallan. Adolin twisted his head to find Pattern standing behind them, giving both of them a hug. His clothing was stiff, like it was made out of glass, and his collar pressed uncomfortably against Adolin's ear.
Pattern said. "I like having arms. If Maya does not speak and you want to hear someone speak, I am very good at talking. I can say words about many kinds of things."
Thanks, Adolin said.
"You are welcome. Should we not walk? On our feet? The ones I now have again? I do like my feet. They are befittingly perambulatory."
He held up his leg and showed bare feet beneath his robe. Curious. Adolin had always assumed they didn't have feet. Pattern moved off, humming delightedly to himself. An hour later, Adolin could still see Urethiru shimmering above, a bonfire of colors and light, though oddly it didn't cast shadows. Many sources of light in Shadesmar didn't, and those that did sometimes cast them in the wrong direction. They ate field rations, continuing steadily downward in a spiral around the enormous pillar. Eventually, he was able to pick out the ocean below. In Shadesmar, land and sea were reversed, so here the continent was manifest as a vast ocean of beads. They'd find ground where rivers ran after high storms or at the edges of the continent, where the oceans began in the real world. All things in Roshar manifested in Shadesmar. Most objects became beads, while living people and animals became little flames of light like the ones he'd seen above. They passed some of those as they walked, hovering off in the distance. Adolin assumed those were the guards who watched over the complex of tunnels and caverns beneath Urethiru. Indeed, there were more lights than he'd expected. Aunt Navani must have gotten her wish to have the caverns better guarded. Eventually, those vanished above, and he was left with only the endless view of the ocean. It bent his mind to think about those beads, the souls of all the objects that made up the physical world, churning and mixing together, forming waves and surging tides, each composed of small beads no wider than his index finger. He passed the time trying to get to know the members of his team. Zu liked to run off ahead, her Spren often advising caution, and as often ignored. Zu had worked as a guide in the Reshi Isles for years, after fleeing there to find a place where people wouldn't, as she put it, keep making rules about how I should live. She'd been glad to come on the mission and get away from the tower, which she considered stuffy. She admitted to some brief combat experience. Her Spren didn't speak much, and often in short sentences when he did. But Adolin liked the defensive implications of having a Spren that was literally made of stone. As she ran off again to scout ahead, Adolin fell into line beside Godeki. The edge dancer kept staring at the sky, grinning like a child with a new sword.
"The works of the Almighty are wondrous," he said. "To think, this beauty was always here with us. Look, are those a new kind of Spren?"
He pointed at some that drifted by in the air. They resembled chickens, with flapping wings and bulbous bodies.
"I think those are glory Spren," Adolin said. "Emotion Spren are like this world's animals. They get pulled through to our side when they sense some kind of strong emotion, and we see them in distorted ways."
"Amazing," Godeki said. "Thank you for bringing me on this trip, Bright Lord. Arcanal has told me of this place at length, but I never thought I'd experience it. I will burn prayers of thanks tonight. If we have a fire, that is. I'm still not sure how all this works."
You continue to follow the Almighty, then?" Adolin asked. "Vornism and all that? Despite finding out that the heralds betrayed us?"
"The heralds are not God, but his servants," Godeki said. "Storms know I've failed him more than once myself."
He adopted a distant expression.
"I don't think we can blame them for eventually wearing out. Rather, I think about how remarkable it is that they worked for so long to keep us safe."
"And the fact that they confirmed the death of the Almighty?"
"The death of honor," Godeki said. "One aspect of the Almighty."
He smiled.
"It's all right, Bright Lord. I can understand someone questioning now, of all times. Remember, though, the Church taught that we are all aspects of the Almighty, that he lives in us, as he lived in the being called Honor, who was tasked with protecting men. The Almighty cannot die. People can die, heralds can die, even Honor could die. But Honor, people, and heralds will all live again, transformed, soul-cast through his power."
Godeki glanced back at his pack horse, which his Spren was riding. Stuffed into the saddlebags and peeking out were several books.
"I'm still learning. We all are. The Book of Endless Pages cannot be filled. Though your father made a very nice addition to the text."
"You're okay with a man writing, then?"
Adolin said, frowning.
"Your father is not simply a man, Adolin," Godeki said. Your father is a holy man, as I was before taking up this new role."
Godeki shook his head.
"All my life I lived with a deformity, and then in an instant I was transformed and healed. I became what I'd always seen myself as being. Your father has undergone a more vibrant transformation. He is as divine as any Ardent, and I must admit, some of what he says makes sense. How can it be forbidden for a person to see the holy words of the Almighty solely because that person is male? makes me wonder whether we've misinterpreted all along, whether we've been selfish, wanting to keep all this for ourselves. I don't accept the conclusions your father came to, but I'm glad people are talking about the church, rather than merely going about their lives assuming the Ardents will take care of everything. Many people only thought of religion when it was time for one of their elevations.
He grinned as another group of glory sprens sailed past.
I cannot wait to write of this to the others of my devotory, when they hear what wonders the Almighty has created here.
Adolin wasn't certain it all made sense, as Godecki explained, but at the same time it was nice to hear someone being so positive. He left Godecki to his excitement and went to chat with Arshkam, translated by her spren. She felt much as he had on his first time in Shadesmar, overwhelmed.
I used to think my life made sense, the woman said through the spren. I used to think I knew how it would end. I didn't want to leave Tashik. There my life was hard, but it was clear.
Why did you leave then? She studied him with a piercing gaze, unwavering.
How could I stay? I still don't know why I was chosen. A woman at the end of her life. But if a child could answer the call, then I certainly could find no excuse.
The child she referenced was Lift, who had recruited this woman along with several others over the past year. The teen seemed to have a knack for locating others who were manifesting powers.
What do you think of her? Adolin asked.
Lift.
She acts strange sometimes, even for a Radiant.
Arshkam grimaced, lips drawn to a distasteful line.
She is what I needed, though I knew it not, and I would not have you tell her of my fondness for her, please. She needs a firm hand.
That was fondness?
Stomp,
Arshkam said through her spren, seeming wistful.
That is what the children called me. A nickname. The only other person who ever gave me a term of endearment was my father. The children see me as a person when so many others have trouble. So the Stump I am. A glorious title to come from children.
What an odd woman. But there was a calm solidity to her, and Adolin was glad to have her along. Once the conversation fell off, Adolin moved to walk with Shallan. They again went over the plans that Jasnah had drawn up for them. Working with the support of the collected monarchs, she'd left Adolin what seemed like an enormous book's worth of instructions. Fortunately, he felt he could execute them. He might not be able to grasp why the shape of Shadesmar was so fascinating to a mapmaker, but acting as a dignitary and an emissary? He'd been trained for this role since his youth. The basic plan was to present the honor spren with gifts, along with written requests to begin relations. Nothing too pushy. An essay written by Jasnah, another written by Dalinar with Queen Fenn's advisement, and a third from the Azish Imperial Court. Adolin was to request admittance to the Honor Spren Fortress, stay a few days to get them used to the idea of talking to humans, then leave with a promise that they'd speak more in the future. Some of the Windrunner Spren thought this would be enough, but Syl, in a rare appearance when Kaladin wasn't around, had come to him the day before.
I worry that this isn't going to work, Adolin, she'd said. I don't think they'll even let you in. They aren't like Honor Spren used to be. They're afraid, and they're angry. I'm glad you want to try, but be prepared for disappointment. And don't let them try to blame you for what Radiance did before.
Wapam spotted the ship first. He waved to Adolin, then pointed over the side of the railing toward the rolling beads that were now only 100 or so feet below. There, docked at the small patch of ground at the base of the pillar, was a flat ship,
a barge. The front portion had a small raised deck from which to steer its flying mandras. There was no sign of cabins or a hold, far less luxurious than the vessels they'd taken the last time. Of course, he wouldn't care to repeat much of that particular experience. He'd gladly take a barge if it meant a peaceful voyage instead.
"My cousin,"
Wapom said, pointing to a figure on the barge waving a light.
"Like him."
"I'll try."
"You will,"
Wapom said. "Another peak spren?" Adolin asked, squinting.
"Yes."
"We saw some of those on our last trip," Adolin said. "They didn't seem to like humans much."
"Cassadin peak spren from the east? They are fools. Forget them."
"You have different nationalities?"
"Obviously, silly man. You will learn."
The creature clapped Adolin on the back with a firm strength. Though his stone hand was warm to the touch, it wasn't hot like Adolin might have expected from the glowing light coming from the cracks. They made the last few rotations around the column before, at long last, arriving at sea level. There was a little stone building built up against the pillar underneath the ramp here, though scouts sent into Shadesmar had reported it empty. Adolin sent two men to search it anyway, then walked forward to meet Wapom's cousin. He was bald, like other peak spren Adolin had met, though they tended to have more cracks on the head than on other parts of the body. He wore a hat not unlike the one Vale favored. He replaced that after bowing to them.
"Welcome, human prince," he said with an affable voice. "You will present payment?"
Adolin held up a small bag of glowing spheres.
"How long do you think it will take to get to the southern bank?"
2 weeks, perhaps," he said,
waving for Adolin's men to lead the horses onto the long barge, which was around 40 feet wide and 100 feet long. A few other peak spren worked on board, moving boxes to make room for the newcomers.
"Easy sailing lately. Few ships. You will be happy and relaxed."
"Few ships?"
"Fews to the east,"
the peak spren captain said, pointing.
"Strange things in Shinovar. Honor spren acting uppity. Nobody wants to travel."
They'd tried to find a spren captain who would sail them straight to Lasting Integrity, the honor spren stronghold. Unfortunately, their options were limited, and all the spren they'd spoken to refused. They said that the honor spren didn't like ships to sail too close. Most agreed that the safest path for Adolin's group was to sail almost directly south until they hit land. From there, they could caravan southwest along the Tukari coastline in the real world until they reached Lasting Integrity. Adolin walked Gallant aboard, then set to unhooking the animal's burdens. It wasn't long before everyone was settled and looking happy to be done with the hike. He'd thought that going downhill the entire way would make it easy, but his calves ached and his knees hurt from the unnatural motion of stepping constantly on a slope. He'd noticed some of the Radiants using Stormlight to keep their energy up, but he hadn't complained. Though their Stormlight resources couldn't be renewed, the smaller spheres would start running out even before the ocean trip was over. The real reserves, the ones they needed to preserve, were all larger gemstones that would keep their light much longer. Wapom joined his cousin in unhooking the ropes from the dock and helping the crew prepare the barge for sailing. This included harnessing up 4 very large mandras, long flying spren with several sets of filmy undulating wings that had been hovering about lazily on leashes. As soon as the mandras were hooked to the vessel, it rose a little higher in the beads. With that, they were off, Adolin's soldiers making camp on the barge deck, where they began arranging boxes to form walls and using tarps to make a kind of shelter. The barge didn't move quickly, but there was a relaxing rhythm to the way it rolled over the beads. The previous ships had cut through them with great crashes. Here, the sound of the beads was more peaceful, a quiet clicking. Adolin helped Shallan settle her things,
including several trunks full of supplies, and she gracefully refrained from joking about how many more trunks Adolin had brought than her. It didn't seem the boat would be moving quickly enough to require them to lash things down, so once her trunks were piled, he brushed his hands off, then paused, noticing his wife. She knelt in front of one of the trunks, which she'd opened to inspect. Her eyes were wide.
"What?"
he asked. She shook her head.
"Nothing. Just some of my paints spilling. That's going to be a mess to clean."
She shut the lid with a sigh, shaking her head as he offered to help.
"No, I can do it."
Well, Adolin didn't want to rest while his men were working, so he walked over to Gallant, who deserved a brushing after carting Adolin's things down that ramp. He set to work, enjoying the familiar motions of the grooming. Gallant kept glancing at Adolin's luggage, where he'd hidden some fruit.
"Not yet," Adolin said.
The horse blew out in annoyance, then looked at Adolin's brush.
"Yes,"
Adolin replied. "I brought all three. You think I'd bring 7 different swords but forget your brushes?" The horse made a kind of clicking sound with his mouth, something Sureblood had never done. Adolin wasn't certain how to interpret it. Mirth? "I'll give you the fruit," Adolin promised, continuing to brush, "but only after..." He trailed off as he noticed Maya standing nearby. He'd settled her near the others earlier, but she'd apparently decided not to stay there. Adolin continued brushing. She watched for a time. Then she tentatively held out her palm. Adolin handed her the brush and she stared at it. She seemed so baffled that he figured he must have misunderstood what she wanted. Then she started brushing the horse as he had, from the top down the side with the exact same motion Adolin had used. Adolin chuckled.
"You have to brush more than one section, Maya, or he'll get annoyed."
He showed her, brushing along Gallant's flank in the direction of the hair growth. Long, slow, careful strokes. She soon got the hang of it, and Adolin stepped back to get a drink. He found 2 of the Peaksbren sailors watching him.
"You're Deadeye,"
one said, scratching at his stone head with a sound of rock on rock.
"I've never seen one trained so well."
"She's not trained," Adolin said. "She wanted to help, so I showed her how."
One sailor looked to the other, then shook his head. They said something in a language Adolin didn't understand, but they seemed unnerved by Maya, giving her a wide berth as they continued about their duties. Adolin sipped from his canteen, watching as the pillar retreated. He could barely make out the glow of the tower city far above, dwindling as they moved.
"I'll do my part, Father,"
Adolin thought.
"I'll give them your letters, but I'll do more. I'll find a way to persuade them to help us, and I'll do it my way."
The trick, of course, was to discover what his way was in the first place.
Shallan knelt before her trunk as everyone else unpacked, and Adolin brushed his horse. She tried not to panic. She failed. So she settled for seeming like she wasn't panicking. While packing her things, she'd taken a memory of Moraes' communication cube, packed away in her trunk. With her uncanny abilities, she could picture it precisely where she'd placed it. She'd wanted to be extra careful, but she hadn't thought the memory would be relevant so quickly, because the cube had been moved. Not just shifted in among her things, it had been picked up and rotated. The face that had been up when she'd packed had a few faint scratches on it. That face was now to the side, an imperceptible difference. Someone without her abilities would never have noticed. Someone had moved the cube. Somehow, between packing and arriving on the barge, someone had rifled through her things and used the cube. She could come to only one conclusion. The spy was indeed on this mission, and they were using this very device to report to Moraes.
23. Binding Wounds. Much as you indicate, there is a division among the other shards I would not have anticipated.
Kaladin pulled the bandage snug on the boy's ankle. Next time, Aiden, he said, take the steps one at a time. The youth nodded solemnly. He was perhaps 12 or 13.
One at a time, until I get my spren.
Oh?
Your spren? I'm going to be a windrunner, the boy said. Then I'll float down steps.
That's what it means to be a radiant, is it? Kaladin asked, standing.
Floating. That, and you can stick your friends to the walls if they argue with you, he said. A windrunner told me.
Let me guess. Short fellow, Herdazian, big smile?
Yup.
Well, until then, Kaladin said, I need you to keep your weight off that foot. He looked at the father, standing nearby, his trousers marked with potter's creme. That means a crutch if he has to walk somewhere. Come back and see me in a week. His progress will let us know for certain if it didn't fracture. The father helped his son with a thankful murmur. As they left, Kaladin dutifully washed his hands in the exam room's basin. He'd picked up his father's mannerisms in that regard. Wisdom of the heralds, it was said. He'd met some of those heralds now, and they didn't seem so wise to him, but whatever. It felt strange to be wearing a white surgeon's apron. Liren had always wanted one of these. He'd said white clothing made people calm. The traveling butchers or barbers, men who often did surgery or tooth work in small towns, tended to be dirty and bloody. Seeing a surgeon wearing white instantly proclaimed, "This isn't that sort of place." He sent Hawen, the town girl who was reading for him today, to fetch the next patient. He dried his hands. Then, standing in the center of the small exam room, he released a long breath.
"Are you happy?"
Syl asked, flitting into the room from the one next door where she'd been watching his father work.
"I'm not sure," Kaladin said. "I worry about the rest of them out there, going into battle without me. But it's good to do something, Syl. Something that helps, but doesn't wring me out like an old wash rag."
Near the end of his time as a windrunner, he'd found even simple sparring to be emotionally taxing. Daily activities, like assigning duties, had required so much effort that they'd left him with a pounding headache. He couldn't explain why. This work, rememorizing medical texts, seeing patients, dealing with difficult parents or light eyes, should have been worse. It wasn't. Busy, but not overwhelmed. Kaladin never saw anyone who was hurt too badly. Those went for regrowth. So while there was tension to his work, there wasn't immediacy. Was he happy? He wasn't sad. For now, he'd accept not sad. Hawen led in the next patient, then excused herself to run to the privy. This patient was an older man with a patchwork beard and a friendly face. Kaladin recognized him. Mill never had been able to grow that beard out like he wanted. While the clinic drew mostly from the people who had lived in Hearthstone, his little town had sprouted significantly in the last few years. Most of the refugees hadn't been Herdazian, but Alethi from villages closer to the border. So while Kaladin felt he should know all of his patients, many were strangers. It was good to see Mill again. He'd always been less mean to Kaladin's family than some others. The old man was complaining of persistent headaches. And indeed, the same pain spren from earlier in the day wiggled back up from the floor. After ruling out the easy causes, dehydration, lack of sleep, Kaladin had him describe where the pain generally originated from, and whether the headaches affected his vision.
"Hawen," Kaladin said, "read me the list of migraine prodromes, please. You'll find them at the divider between head and neck."
He trailed off, remembering his reader had left. A moment later, though, a different voice said,
Prodromes. Right. Just a sec.
He looked toward the reading desk to find Syl laboriously lifting pages and flipping them over. She didn't have much strength in the physical realm, but ignoring gravity, walking up into the air to tow the page by its corner, helped, and the book wasn't far from the appropriate page. She found it and landed on the large tome, kneeling to read the words one at a time.
Neck stiffness, she said.
Constipation, Kaladin said. She giggled, then kept reading.
Mood changes, cravings, thirst. I think that says frequent need to pee. Storms, stuff goes out of you and it's bad. Stuff doesn't go out of you and it's bad. How do you live like this?
He ignored that, chatting with Mill about his pains. He suggested visiting the Edge Dancers for regrowth, but Mill's pains had been around for months, so it was unlikely that they could do anything. Fortunately, there were medicines that could help, and, with Jasna capable of soul-casting a wide range of substances, they had access to rare medications. Though Kaladin and the Queen didn't often see eye to eye, it said a great deal about her that she was willing to take time to make medicine.